revenge. From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you very much. How are you doing then? Monday. Monday it is, the 30th of November. First show of the week. Hope you're well. Hope you've had a good old Monday thus far. Dr. Vernon Coleman a bit later on this evening. Before that, Johnny Fedmore, great writer, musician, top bloke. I think it'll be a decent old show. A decent show, I tell you. Welcome to it, by the way. Join in on Twitter. You know the drill.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, if anything, the live Richie Allen radio show is at least an antidote to the constant 5 o'clock UK government briefings. I didn't realise it till I just looked at the BBC. But as I speak to you now, dear friend, Matt Hancock, that absolute goon, that spoon of a Muppet, Matt Hancock, is briefing the media from Downing Street again. Never ending. Anyway, Johnny Fedmore and Dr. Vernon Coleman swapping emails with Dr. Vernon today. He seems to be in good form, as am I. Love to be with you. To be with you, I love. Right, let's just jump straight in. I've got to get through quite a bit between now and 5:25 when Johnny joins the programme. I was going to watch The Goonies last night. Why were you going to watch The Goonies, Richie? Well, because I had Bacardied the bejesus out of myself. Something I hadn't done for weeks. I'd been off that hard stuff for weeks. I had a few Bacardies yesterday after a few Guinnesses. I'm not proud of it. But I Bacardied the living bejesus out of myself and got all nostalgic again and said I'd watch The Goonies. I didn't end up watching it. There was a trigger warning on it. Did you see this? I put a screen grab on Twitter. Trigger warnings for The Goonies. Everything comes with a trigger warning now. And it says on Sky under the film, this film has outdated attitudes, language and cultural depictions which may cause offence today. Film was made in 1985. Fat shaming? Chunk? I don't know. I don't know what attitudes were expressed in The Goonies that might cause offence to anybody today, but that's a real tragedy, isn't it? The development, the advent of this nonsense, trigger warnings. And the Manchester United footballer who hails from Uruguay, a man called Edison Cavani, he's in the soup today. He played a blinder yesterday afternoon down at St Mary's against Southampton, and he scored two goals and bailed Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He bailed him out of the shite, really. Did Edinson Cavani, the 33-year-old Uruguayan. And on Instagram after the game, one of his mates congratulated him on his performance. So Edinson replied, "Gracias, Negrito." Gracias, Negrito. So he's in the soup now. You can't say that. That's racist. That's racist now, apparently. And I told this story before, so I'll tell it again really briefly. When I lived and worked in Spain, for a time I worked at a dreadful radio station that was based at the Kempinski Hotel, which is a 5-star beautiful hotel. And we were fed in the underbelly of the hotel with all the other staff, with all the hotel staff, the porters, the waiters, the waitresses and all that. We were fed in the underbelly. And one of my co-presenters was a brilliant presenter called Sonny. Sonny is black and he's originally from Panama, but he grew up in America. So he's a fantastic American accent, East Coast accent. Sonny, lovely fella, black. And we were sitting down in the canteen one afternoon and the phone went in the canteen and a very comely Spanish waitress ran to the phone and she answered it. And when she answered it, she looked up at the rest of the canteen and she said, "Hey, negro, telephone." And this black kid got up and went to take the telephone. And as he did, he pushed the Spanish girl. They were laughing and joking, and he said something rude to her that made her laugh. So I looked at Sonny and I said, "Jesus, Mary and Holy Saint Joseph, Sonny, did she just call him Blackie?" And Sonny said, "No, it's not like that. It's a Spanish thing. It's an affectionate thing. It isn't racist." I said, "You wouldn't mind it?" He said, "No, I've been called Negro by my mates back home in my Latino mates back home in America and in Panama. No big deal," he said. Anyway, but Edinson Cavani might get a 3-game ban for saying "Gracias, Negrito." Troy Deeney, who's a very smart man, very well spoken, He's a black footballer who plays for Watford. Troy was on TalkSport today. He said, yes, Edinson didn't mean to cause any offence. Yes, it's fairly common in Spanish-speaking countries, but ban him for more than 3 games, said Troy Deeney. Where's the niceness gone? Where's the decency gone out of people? Where's the option to say, hey, Edinson, it's all right in Latin America, but saying Negrito might wind some people up over here, so maybe just keep an eye on it. No, straight to ban him. Now for matters more serious. Nadeem Zahawi is a Tory MP, and an ugly Tory MP is he. Horrible backstart. But he's a health minister. He's been given the job of overseeing the rollout of the COVID vaccines. He has. Nadeem Zahawi. He's the man to manage the rollout of the many, 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 many COVID vaccines. He was on BBC World at One today, BBC 4, Radio 4, World at One, talking a lot about vaccine uptake. And, well, you really need to hear this. This is important.
What we can't do is compel people. We all, actually, the opposite. We can compel people to take the vaccine. We can demonstrate why it is the safest way of being able to be healthy.
But you wouldn't be compelling them to take it, would you?
No, I mean, I'd be asking them to take it. We would be demonstrating the safety. We will be able to hopefully demonstrate the rigor and the safety work that's been done. Phase one, by the way, is where safety begins.
Sure.
And it goes all the way through to phase three with a large population
know that for the sake of the community, herd immunity is expected to be around what 70 to 80% is the broad thinking at the moment. Now, if 36% of people don't want to take it, you have a problem. I wonder how you address that.
Well, first of all, you need a very strong campaign to demonstrate the level of rigor that you've been through. And I think once people see the level of rigor and care that's been taken by the regulator to look at this really properly, and they are independent of government, and it's worth sort of reminding listeners of that. I think you'll see that.
They're independent of government, he said, but are they independent of the big pharmaceutical companies? Maybe not.
I think you'll see that number when they see their friends and family and others being vaccinated. That attitude will change. The transparency is really, really important. That's what I'm pushing my whole team to make sure we do and are ready to do. And I think you'll find that number will begin to come down.
Would you like to see those who are perhaps deliberately pushing conspiracy theories about vaccine dealt with more harshly? Should the government look at introducing a new law to tackle that?
Yes. He goes on to
say, what we can't do is...
He goes on to say that we need to put all of the burden on the social media companies, right? But then it gets very interesting. Listen to this.
It's good for your family. It's good for your community.
Listen to this now. This is about whether the vaccine could in any way be compulsory or mandatory.
It's good for your family. It's good for your community. It's good for your country to be vaccinated. And ultimately, people will have to make a decision.
Okay, but presumably it will be the case that if you have a vaccine, you will then have some form of immunity passport. And we know that Baroness Harding, who's running Test and Trace, is looking at this idea of even having it in the app, the proof of your vaccine status. That is presumably going to limit what some people do. If you want to go to a football game, for example, or if you want to get on a flight.
We are looking at the technology and, of course, a way of people being able to inform their GP that they've been vaccinated. But also, I think you'll probably find restaurants and bars and cinemas and other venues, sports venues, will probably also use that system, as they've done with the app. The reason I think partly the app's been so successful, I think we're touching just under 19 million downloads of the app, is because a lot of places that you would go to, they'd got the QR code from the NHS that you scan for your own safety. And so I think in many ways, the sort of the pressure will come from both ways, from service providers who will say, look, demonstrate to us that you've been vaccinated. But all
pressure will come from service providers who will say to you, demonstrate to us that you've been vaccinated. And I predicted this. I said this months ago. This is how it's going to work. It'll be the private sector saying to you, You can't come in unless your digital health passport demonstrates to us that you've had the vaccine. This is tyranny. It's what tyranny looks like. And it's a word that's become a bit cheap, maybe out of my mouth because I use it so often, but it is tyranny.
But also, we will make the technology as easy and as accessible as possible.
Okay, so it'll become virtually impossible to do anything if you don't have the vaccine.
I think people have to make a decision, but I think...
Yeah, it'll become virtually impossible to do anything if you don't have the vaccine, said the Radio 4 presenter very helpfully.
You'll probably find many service providers will want to engage in this in the way they did with the app.
Yeah, you won't be able to go anywhere unless you've had the vaccine. And I am never going to have the vaccine. It's as simple as that. Fortune magazine ran an article over the weekend. You may have seen it, you may not have seen it, discussing how your boss... this is in the States now, how your employer might be in a position to insist that you have the job. Coercion. It's how I saw it from day one. And I think I might be right. I'm often wrong, but I think I might be right. Will celebrities be used to go all out to persuade people to take the needle? Here's Rachel Burden, BBC Radio 5 Live, this morning about 6:15 a.m.
Story on the front page of The Guardian this morning that they are perhaps looking at using sort of trusted celebrities to be advocates of the new coronavirus vaccine. Now, I don't know whether this is actually going to happen, but it did lead to a discussion this morning about who would you trust? And that's not to say there is any assumption here that you wouldn't trust this vaccine anyway. I will be first in the queue as soon as I can get one. That is for sure.
I'll be first in the queue if I can get one. That's for sure, says the BBC presenter.
But who would you listen to? Who is your sensible celebrity? Who do you think the message could be best sold by in terms of go out, get this vaccine, stick a needle in your arm? Love to know this morning. Inevitably, names like David Attenborough came up. Olivia Colman. We're sort of international treasures here, aren't we? Miranda Hart was my suggestion. 85058 at BBC Five Live. I mean, equally, you might want to suggest people you definitely wouldn't listen to. A couple of candidates for that this morning.
She goes on to talk about Rita Ora, who's a singer, allegedly. I don't know much about her music. She had a 30th birthday party, I think, in a restaurant, and she's had to apologise for that after the police turned up. Amazingly. So there's Burden talking about how she'll be first in line to get the vaccine and talking about getting celebrities to push it pretty hard and to tell people it's very safe. Now, a few minutes later, she was joined by her co-host, Nikki Campbell. This is how it works. She starts off at 6 o'clock. At 6:30, she's joined by Campbell, who broadcasts from home, like myself. And Campbell was all for the idea to get celebs to push the vaccine.
Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. Tina's put a little Christmas tree up in my study here.
What a dickhead.
Yeah.
I need to FaceTime you so I can see it. I don't have anything here. I'm going to have to bring in some tinsel.
I'll give you a wee photo. I like this idea about sensible celebrities.
Oh, I've got some more suggestions here.
Enlisted and influencers as well with big social media followings in this campaign to persuade people to have a COVID vaccine. I've got the perfect one you. But anyway,
I can give you suggestions from Margot. She's come up with quite an extensive list. Matt Lucas, Stephen Fry, Nadia Hussein, great shout, Marcus Rashford, and the girls from Little Mix.
Yeah. Mm. I got it.
The girls from Little Mix.
I got it, though. I got it.
Go on.
Davina.
Oh.
Perfect.
Yeah.
She could turn up on your door with vaccines.
Davina McCall can turn up on your doorstep with vaccines, the way Shane Ritchie used to turn up to see where your white's whiter than white. There's never been a greater virtue signaller on planet Earth than Nikki Campbell. The Nikki Campbell who looks out for Britney Spears. This is what you're paying. I haven't ever had a TV licence in the UK. BBC. There's no way. Nothing could compel me to pay for the BBC listening to that garbage. I mean, this is garbage.
Do you know what? She'd deliver it with a smile.
Wouldn't she? And a hug. No, you can't do that.
That woman does not have a smile on her face.
She is brilliant. I think she's top of the pyramid for this one. She's
I shall add her to the
perfect.
List.
Marvellous. Top of the pyramid, eh? Nikki Campbell, Rachel Burden there. Number of you were in touch with me over the weekend, including the oft-mentioned Yerwan Crowley, my great friend Jean Anne, about the Late Late Tie Show. Late Late Show is an Irish magazine television programme, one of the most successful, one of the longest running television shows in the world. And once a year, obviously around Christmas time, the programme becomes The Tie Show, and it's all about children and toys, the latest in toy development and all of that sort of nonsense and music and all that sort of thing. Must have been different this year because of all the COVID nonsense. A number of you were very upset at a sketch which was contained in the toy show on Friday, a sketch involving a little girl called Saoirse, who was demonstrating on the programme, demonstrating how to administer a coronavirus vaccine to a toy dog. Now, it's a shame you can't see this, but we can hear a little bit of it. The programme is presented by a world-class goon called Ryan Tuberty. He really is bad. I have a listen. Saoirse, young, very young kid, lovely-looking kid. I'm sure a lovely child, lovely family, but certainly used. Used. And it's not good.
Who's this?
This is Toby Tuberty, and he's here in the vet centre today to be tested for coronavirus.
Okay, so Tony Tuberty is being tested. Was he reporting any symptoms?
No.
So Toby Tuberty, the dog, the Thai dog, is asymptomatic, is having a coronavirus test but doesn't have any symptoms.
Oh.
No, he's just hypochondriac. Okay, so what are you going to do with Tony Tuberty for the test?
So first we need to take a sample of all his known contacts. So he told me he's been in contact with 3 dogs in the last 14 days. So then that goes to the post office to be posted to the HSE.
Oh, my God. Your children shouldn't know this. Anyway, that's right. You're dead. You're doing all the right things. Tony would be delighted with you. Go on. The other Tony. What happens next?
Now he gets medicine to help him with coronavirus.
Oh, great. And so did he actually have the virus?
I think so.
Okay.
And over here is the regurgitation station.
What's that?
If he needs to vomit.
Oh, I see.
After the medicine.
Okay.
Now we need to get him a Pfizer.
Pfizer?
Vaccine.
Gosh, you don't waste time, do you, Saoirse? You're ahead of the game. So does he like...
He's not participating, so we're going to have to knock him out.
Okay. He's not participating, so we're going to have to knock him out, said the child.
Okay. Tony's having a rough day at the clinic. Okay, so you've
now
knocked him out.
Now we need to just check if he's still with us.
Okay, that's a good...
Yep, he's still with us.
He's still with us. Okay, this is great. This is the story of survival, isn't it? So what happens
now
next?
Now he gets the Pfizer vaccine.
Bang, okay.
Bang, and it might be the last thing he ever gets. That's astonishing to me. As somebody who learned his trade in Ireland, in my country, that was unthinkable when I began my career in journalism in 1998. Unthinkable. There's no point in me elaborating on that. That's astonishingly bad on so many levels. The child was obviously rehearsed. She was rehearsed pretty hard for that little sketch. And it's basically an infomercial for Pfizer on the national broadcaster on a Friday night. And apart from Jim Corr, apart from Jean Ann and Jim Corr, well known. Jean Ann's a journalist, an actress. Told you all about Jean Ann before. Apart from them, there aren't too many people complaining about that or asking questions about it. But that's where we're going. Vaccines. It's 21 minutes past the hour. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Don't forget Dr. Vernon Coleman will be on the radio with me in the second hour. Great to catch up with Dr. Vernon again. I was a bit disappointed in Ian Collins today. I caught a little bit of Ian Collins on talk radio and he was scathing. Maybe scathing is overdoing it a little bit. Maybe I'm overdoing it. But he was very condemning of people who marched in London on Saturday and he was questioning their motives, which is a bit gaslighting, really. Surprised you don't ask some of these people to come on and explain why they felt the need to assemble and to congregate in London on Saturday. They have every right, it's a human right, to be able to move about freely, regardless of what the goons, the morons, the muppets, the thickos at Imperial College London say. It is your human right to go, to travel, to walk where you please and when you please. And nobody should be critical of that. Bonnie Greer made me laugh the other day. Jesus, imagine a black woman and all that entails, all the history. She'll know her own history of black suppression, of the human rights marches. Dr. King, imagine coming out and criticising a freedom march. we're here now, aren't we? We're in the times that we always feared we'd be in. When I come back in a moment from this tune from ABBA, which is a great little stroll down memory lane, Johnny Vedmore, the journalist, will be with me. For more on Johnny, go to his website, johnnyvedmore.com.
If you change your mind,
take a chance.
Music from ABBA there and Take a Chance on Me. That was covered pretty well by Erasure, wasn't it? On Erasure, on ABBA-esque, was it? ABBA-esque, I think it was. Anyway, I'm just reminiscing. That's what I do. 26 minutes, it is past 5 o'clock. Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm live in Salford. And I'm delighted to welcome back my first guest today because I think he's a terrific writer. And I really do mean that. Go to his website, johnnyvedmore.com. But you can read him a lot on unlimitedhangout.com, another very good website with a lot of very good information, unlimitedhangout.com. Musician, writer, and it's been ages, so let's just get on with it and welcome Johnny Vedmore back to the programme. Johnny, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, I'm here. Can you hear me?
You sound fantastic. Welsh dulcet tones there. Good to have you back on the programme, mate. And
I've got a fantastically complicated setup, and unfortunately it didn't work for me.
Sure, look, these things happen. You, before we talk about your work on Pfizer and the coming vaccines, mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you will be aware that the government has appointed Nadeem Zawahi.
Yeah, they couldn't have found a darker character.
And he's going to roll it out. And in an interview with BBC Radio 4's Word at One today, he basically accepted the presenter's contention that if you don't get the vaccine, you won't be able to do very much. Now, as a musician, my friend, how do you feel when you hear that? I mean, the coercion thing, I suppose we could say, we saw coming. But the idea that your social life, maybe even your working life, might be curtailed severely if you don't have the vaccine. What's your response to that?
Right. Well, first of all, they had already done so much during the time of austerity to destroy the music industry, the live music industry, the working men's music industry, the place where people go to actually play in clubs. All of those clubs were closing down. They were constantly being harassed by authorities anyway, due to, like, you know, they would build a flat next to a nightclub or a live venue. And then the people in the flat would obviously complain, and then they'd have an excuse to close the places down. Slowly, through the whole of Cardiff, really, each venue that we used to have had already been shutting down before this whole year happened, this dystopian nightmare that we're entering into now. All it does is put a final nail in the coffin and force people really to... go digital with a lot of their stuff, which is what the aim of this is anyway, is to try and force people into a digital world. And when you're talking about the restrictions they're going to put in place, well, I'm looking to getting out of this country, because they're going to put they announced on the 28th of November, and it was in the Telegraph and the Scum and the other various newspapers saying that they we're going to have vaccine stamps in our passports before we can travel overseas. And this is a start of keeping you in one place. This is a start of making sure that they can keep everybody. The whole point of this is to keep everybody indoors as much as possible. I mean, it doesn't matter what the reason is behind them keeping us indoors. That is the main aim, because it stops any protests, it stops any backlash towards these. There's no public policy debate anymore about anything. If they want to do something, and they've made that quite clear when you're talking about the new telecom, the technology that takes over after 4G that you can't mention or things get pulled down. Yeah. I mean, you can't talk about these. And this is a real big problem, is we can't talk about public policy. We can't have a debate within the public. We can't say what's the evidence, what's not the evidence. Let's make up our mind and then let's support it or not support it. We're being denied that basic right that we have always had. We've always, I mean, since I was born at least, this ability to go and bother the powers that be until they listen to us. And they taking that away on purpose. This is fundamentally how the future is going to look to them. This isn't just over the next year and the next vaccine. This is for a long time.
this great reset doesn't take 1 year, doesn't take 2 years. This thing that they've been denying for years that has been happening and is happening right now. This is like we are right on the first moment of when it gets physical, when they actually start putting things inside our bodies without our consent. That moment is already being put into action. We're coming up to it. Operation Warp Speed in America and the yeah. same equivalent over here. I mean, what, it's the 7th of December? If you want to be free, you're going to, over the next, especially 3-4 months, you're going to have to find another place to live than Britain, than America.
Is there anywhere to go? I'm going to ask you in a minute more about that because I want to stay with something. There will be people screaming at their devices now saying, Richie, challenge Johnny, challenge him, challenge him, challenge him. It isn't mandatory. But of course it is mandatory. What he said today, Zahawi, to the BBC Radio 4 presenter, was he basically said that the private sector will basically drive this. So it's one thing to say it's not mandatory, but in the same sentence they're saying you won't be able to do very much unless you have it. That's coercion, that.
It is. And what is mandatory once you're living in a world where they can control a large amount of the public population through marketing and publicity campaigns that they are so overtly now taking part in about these vaccines. The stuff you played at the beginning of your show there, that was horrific. I mean, that's some of the stuff. It's like it really is a dystopian movie. We've gone along the wrong line of some multiverse sort of like disaster. This is really the point where it's not about whether as well they are able to inject us all with this vaccine. They're going to try and inject as many people. They're not going to get everybody, that's for sure. But our fellow humans, the people who may not know or may not have read or may be being duped, the most vulnerable in society, those people are the ones who are going to be affected. And we're going to watch that happen and say, oh, it's all right because it's not mandatory for everybody. You know, it's only this vulnerable lot over here, which we've been protecting up until we make that decision not to protect them, which is exactly what's happened in 2020. Do not resuscitate being put up on people's beds nearly straight away. As soon as the virus had gone into action in March, the actual campaign, the COVID campaign that's behind the virus, as soon as that had gone into function, they already have their agenda set up. They know exactly what they're doing. They're going to push forward in trying to target certain members of our society. And if you, I'm writing at the moment for a site called Unlimited Hangout, which is run by a lady named Whitney Webb, who is one of the most fantastic independent journalists out there, uncovering the cyber operations and the vaccine operations and a lot of the Epstein stuff. And she does marvelous work. Well, one of her reports the other day went deep into how they're targeting vulnerable people and ethnic minorities first. And this is obvious, you know, put the black man in the vanguard and so get right behind and make sure that you don't have to have that problem in the future, because maybe it'll all go wrong. If it all goes wrong, okay, it'll be disabled people and black people who will be hurt by it. And that's the approach they're taking. They're making this vaccine along all sorts of social lines, and it's all about dividing and conquering. That's what they're doing, and that's what they're succeeding at the moment.
Yeah, they are. I mentioned in the introduction, you didn't hear me, I did mention the website. I mentioned your own website, johnnyfedmore.com.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
those articles, unlimitedhangout.com, I did mention earlier, as well as Johnny's own articles there. There are articles by other journalists and by the owner of the website that are very interesting. I recommend people check it out if they haven't before. Johnny Fedmore, the musician and independent journalist, live on the Richie Allen Show today. It's a great article about Pfizer, and we obviously don't have time to get into every aspect of it today, but there are a couple of aspects of the article I want to pick up on. But before I do that, where, Johnny, in the name of Jesus, where is there on planet Earth that any of us could say, well, I'll go and live there? Where? Venezuela? Where would you go? Where would you even consider going, you know?
Right. Okay. Well, I would say that there's certain, no place is free of this. If you look from Australia to Chile to everywhere in the world, this is global. This is so all encompassing. But there can, it comes down to the fact of standing up and fighting against them. You can be here in Britain and you can stand up and refuse it.
Yeah.
But there's more chance that they're going to force you down. At some point in the future, not straight away, but at some point in the future, this is going to get to the point where you cannot move in the country. You cannot buy goods. You cannot go on holidays. You cannot do normal things. You cannot work if you do not have a stamp on your vaccine passport. That is one of the fundamental points of control that they've been looking in. They've been finding, ID cards. It's really like functionally all of the same sort of thing that they've been trying to introduce for the past 30, 40 years to keep us in control, but now the technology is just beyond anything we've had before,
which is making it easier for them to do this. Yeah. One of the things you talk about in the article about Pfizer, and I try to bang this drum as much as I can, is its practice of testing its medicine. And I've banged on about this for many years, how often these companies go into what we used to know as third world countries, where there is a lot of poverty, and they test their medicines or their vaccines on people in extreme poverty, people living below the margins. And it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. Pay them a pittance. And often they're bribing politicians and authorities in these places. And I don't think very many people know about this, Johnny. And you get into it in your article, and it's brilliant. People should understand what sort of grimy practices are par for the course for these pharmaceutical companies.
There's very many similarities to the... I focused in on one which is a really important one because we've got lots of data on it. It went through a court case. Pfizer still hasn't taken any responsibility. Even their final statement on it after like a 10-year court battle was, yes, it happened and we didn't do any of it really. Everybody was actually made a little bit better, even though that loads of people died, and we're only accepting responsibility for 5 deaths over here and 6 deaths over here out of what was reported in Nigeria as being 50 deaths. Now, this was the Trovan experiment. I think it was meningitis medication that they decided to test. Now, there's a real interesting similarity here if we start off it. When they wanted to do this test, number one, they didn't tell people quite what they were doing, so they didn't give all of the details out, and that sort of transparency isn't a surprise, but is especially not in a place like Nigeria, because they were in Kano State. So a lot of the people around there weren't so educated, didn't know. They thought they were turning up to give their children a meningitis jab during a meningitis outbreak. They had no idea that it was anything other. They didn't realize there was a test going on. They didn't realize their kids would be set up into sample groups. 200 children were set up into sample groups of 100 on each side. 100 of them would be given Trovan, this experimental drug that Pfizer was testing. And the others were supposed to be given a full dose of what the market leading drug was. So there was already a market leader. I don't recall his name, but there was already a market leader, and it was already doing well. And it was all the tests showed that Trovan wasn't as good as his market leader. So the actual tests in the first place were a bit useless. But anyway, they split up these sample groups, and they gave half of them Trovan and half the recommended dose of the leading medication, so that they could skew the trials to make Trovan look like it was better than the leading other market leader. This is something that they're doing now. There's I think it's either the Moderna or AstraZeneca. You'd have to check this, but I know it's come from very good sources, that the actual placebo that they're using alongside the actual vaccine is another vaccine for something else.
Yeah, I've heard that.
That have side effects.
Yeah.
So that when people have that, then they can say, oh, well, there was no difference in side effects between that side and the other part of the sample group. So it's how they skewer the results to be in their favor all of the time. And they're doing this publicly. This is why, I mean, it's beyond dystopia. And I think it explains why there's been a lot of nonsense over the past 5 years politically, lots of nonsense, Brexit stuff and things like that. All of that was just seemed like a sideshow leading up to something.
Distraction, you think? Distraction for this?
Yeah,
this was always the plan.
Maybe you can say that there was a lot of people that the idea that they were fighting against the globalist regime being imposed, which is really what the was in the background of Brexiteers' minds, and now a globalist regime is being imposed.
Johnny Vedmore is our guest. JohnnyVedmore.com is the website. UnlimitedHangouts.com. I've just tweeted that article from last week about Pfizer's new mRNA, messenger RNA vaccine. And it's really good journalism and writing, Johnny. There's no nonsense there. You make the point that you talk about what it is. It's easy to read and easy to understand. It's not going to impact. I mean, you get people online saying this is going to alter our DNA. Mm-hmm. And you get into that and how it isn't. But that doesn't mean that it isn't something we should be concerned about. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a pedantic argument they use and a fallacy to try and trap us into this argument that they want to frame the debate. This is how these people work to create an argument that they've already worked out. Now, mRNA vaccines will change a function of your DNA goes through. It's not while your DNA is DNA. It's when your DNA naturally separates into two so that it can call for proteins from other parts of your body and it can't fit through this little wall, this little cell wall. So it splits in two down the middle and half of it goes through the cell wall and joins up with messenger RNA and that sends a signal to which proteins you want to receive. So that's pretty simple. It edits a function of your DNA goes through after it's just split in two. And because of that, they can say, well, it doesn't affect your DNA. But in a sense, it's affecting a function of what your DNA does. What was that that mRNA that is being replaced with this? We're asking for a protein to be called by giving new mRNA, but which protein is now being replaced? What thing are we not getting? This vaccine is very interesting because they use that, the fact that people, they don't articulate how the vaccine works properly, and then they use the fact that people don't have the knowledge of how the vaccine works against the general public. And then because they are able to say, for instance, like, oh, you say it's a DNA vaccine, but it's not, it's an mRNA vaccine, doesn't mean you should take the vaccine. It's a fallacy to try and convince that to people. And their problem is that they haven't articulated how the vaccines work, how the technology works, and they're not going to, because they need to keep this trap going. They need to keep finding people. And you're going to speak with Vernon Coleman later. I mean, wow, I love that man. He's wonderful. When I was going into this article really deep, it was just during one of your shows with him a couple of weeks ago, and I heard him making the mistake of DNA vaccine. Than mRNA vaccines. And you said about it like soon afterwards and a couple of shows later.
Yeah.
And that is what they want to punish criminally. Keir Starmer, the friend of some of the most rancid people when he was head of public prosecutions or whatever position he used to protect Jimmy Savile to certain degrees, he is just a nasty. He's an establishment person. He'll do whatever they tell him to do. And he's there saying, oh, let's not question anything the government does. Let's not question any of this. Instead, let's criminalize people for not understanding something that the drug companies and the government and the scientific advisors have not properly articulated to the people.
Yeah, he does. The Labour Party is in favour, not just of punishing social media companies, but if anybody has heard in recent weeks, people like Lisa Nandy Angela Rayner and others on television. They have called for sanctions against ordinary men and women for what they call misinformation, which in many cases isn't misinformation. It's questions that should be being asked by Nikki Campbell, Rachel Burden and BBC Radio 4. But rather than ask those questions, they're championing. I mean, if you ever heard anything like it, did you ever think you would live to see the day when a BBC presenter would say, "I'll be the first in the queue to get it"? Love, it's your job to ask questions about it. Not
some
champion
of the things
it.
They're saying are completely unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Listening to they're in. They're probably going to get. I mean, I bet you in a year's time we'll discover that loads of people got bonuses for their time pumping out pro-vaccine arguments. And to be honest, all of this it's all been so rotten for so long. We've really got to realize. I mean, you know, because we talked about on our first ever conversation, we talked very briefly about Jeremy Corbyn, and he's a really good example of how all politics fails really badly. You get an opportunity to stand up and speak against the atrocities and the crimes that a very small band of elites are doing all around the world, and you don't take it at all.
No,
you ignore it.
You ignore
it. You hide away from it because you know that you're only there because you're getting paid for doing it. At the end of the day, he takes a salary, and he took a salary to be quiet at the end of it. And I know lots of people will see him as a hero and will say he was the best ever, but he proved to be very weak. He proved to be one of the weakest leaders around at a time where we need one of the strongest.
It was heartbreaking for me.
Someone to stand up against people like Netanyahu, not just cower down and only like apologize for the smears that he should never apologize for anyway. The majority of whatever they said in the news at that time was amazingly put together, coordinated by people attached with the Israeli embassy, and it was just like, I mean, it's a shit show, man.
It is, and I still feel sorry for people. I remember when he was put forward for the leadership contest, and people got
Joe Cox was one of the ones he put in forward.
That's right, and everybody got very excited, and I was telling anybody who would listen that if he did win, it wouldn't make any difference. And I remember speaking to a chap who phoned in one of the phone-in shows very early on, and he thought, "You're very hard, Richie. I was at a meeting with Jeremy many years ago, and the things he said, Richie, about the Zionist influence in UK politics, the things." And I said, "Listen, he's never again going to repeat any of those things." And I got, you know, understandably, I got hammered for me being a socialist, and I take no pleasure whatsoever in being proven.
It's the hope. It's the hope.
The hope that kills you.
I mean, it really does. It keeps you as much under the thumb as the authoritarians do, as the people who are trying to get you, and the people who hope is supposed to fight against. They're the people who keep us under the thumb as well by acquiescing and accepting and just keeping going forward with this idea that one day someone nice will come along and convince everybody else to be nice in a system where nobody's nice. Nobody's nice. Part of my issue came with Jeremy Corbyn halfway through, when I was really deep into the research of the historic child sex abuse scandals, various ones, and seeing that he didn't do anything in Islington at the time when Margaret Hodge. And she's I've been investigating lots of the cyber the Israeli front cyber operations that are happening, and even Margaret Hodge's name has come up when I've come when I'm looking through there. She's involved in so much. She's involved in so much. She is spread everywhere. There's a few of them. They have been so loyal to their masters for so long that they're untouchable.
Stay in that position. They don't get more vile than Margaret Hodge, by the way.
Agreed.
JohnnyVedmore.com. Johnny's done a lot now on historic child sex abuse. Very, very worthwhile. If you haven't read any of those articles, to get to start digging down into some of that stuff. It's coming up for 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got Johnny for another 10 minutes or thereabouts. Let's go back to kind of where we are now. Mm-hmm. I'm not pessimistic. Not by nature, I'm not. But I'm struggling to see a way out of what's coming in the coming months. I seem to be surrounded by people. When I say people, I mean the people I live near and around and the people I meet. And they just can't wait for the vaccine because mm-hmm. it's so horrible living like this. This miserable feckin' existence that they think, fan dabby dozy, I'll get it in March and we'll just get back to normal. And I think, you know, I don't see anything stopping that. I mean, Zahawi said they worry that maybe 36%. No, he didn't say that. The BBC presenter said to him that polls show that maybe 36% of those polled are unlikely to take it at the moment. But Johnny, mm-hmm. I'd love that to be true. I'm not even sure that is true.
No,
what do you think?
No, I was amazed. I'll be really honest with you. I went and renewed my passport. It's coming back very soon, and I'm looking to get out of here in the next 7 days, 6 days.
All right.
I can't. I'm looking to get out of Britain. And I went to, I had to go to a supermarket to have one of those digital photos with a code done for renewing my passport. And I walked into the supermarket for the first time since lockdown has happened. I did not want to be part of any of that. I got local shops where they know the situation and they don't force you to do anything like wear a mask or anything like that. So I prefer to stick with those guys, anybody who doesn't agree with it. But I went into the big Tesco's, massive Tesco's, that's on Western Avenue in Cardiff, and there was not one person, not one. It was full up as well. It was really busy because Wales is like slightly open at the moment, so it was really busy, and not one of them was free of a mask. They were all wearing them, and they wouldn't look at me in the eye, and it felt quite weird. It almost felt like floating
creepy
through this dystopian landscape, yeah, where people have just given up. They've already been, it's so amazing how quickly the majority of people will just bend over.
Oh, Johnny, I was listening to Emma Barnett this morning for my sins. This is the dirty side of my job, having to listen
I do the same.
You're a proper journalist. Listening to people like Emma Barnett, I mean, dreadful stuff. But there was a fascinating exchange this morning. She was phoned by a woman called Julie from Birmingham, and it was genuine. It was no setup. And Julie, I've got the clip here, but I'm not going to play it today. I might play it later in the week, or not play it at all. Julie was delighted to report to Emma Barnett that recently Julie rang up the old bill and dobbed in one of her neighbours who is a hairdresser and who was accepting clients in her home.
Oh, it makes me sad.
Sad, not angry.
On a human level,
yeah.
It makes me really sad on a human level that somebody who's trying to make some sort of money during hard times,
yeah,
has a neighbour like that.
Imagine that. I couldn't believe it. And to be fair, Barnett did ask the right questions. And when they were speaking, the tweets were coming in and they were pretty harsh, you know, basically saying to Julie, you know, you're a grass. Some of them are very rude, but one or two of them are like, that's terribly sad. How can you, exactly as you said, how could you do that to your neighbour? What is she doing? She's cutting people's bloody hair for a living to put food on the table.
That's exactly what my mum did when she was young. She was a hairdresser, apart from when she was working in a warehouse cutting the edges off cheese, old mouldy cheese. She
is that right?
And working in the hospitals. I mean, she worked for, when I was very young, she worked for the NHS washing test tubes and stuff. Wow. You know, she was a normal, everyday valley girl to an extent. She won't like me saying that out loud. But she wouldn't have survived without me cutting hair. Now imagine that same person today in a way that is so esoteric. You're not allowed to cut someone's hair. I mean, it's beyond reason.
It's shocking. The outcome was the police came and knocked on the neighbor's door and issued the neighbor with a fine. That was the outcome of it. And then the police encouraged Julie to basically to do it again, that if the girl continued to do it, that she should stay in touch with them. It's like you said earlier, you summed it up beautifully earlier on when you talked about listening to Zahawi today. You just can't believe you're listening to that. I'm like, surely I'll wake up and it'll be a bad
dream. It's a John Carpenter movie. From the time of They Live, it really is. It's from the time when they wouldn't fund John Carpenter anymore because he was obviously saying a little bit too much. it's really, really something that I've never thought I'd experience fully. I always thought it would be like, you know, something like this would happen in another country, but not be global.
You know the Welsh people I know. I know a few Welsh people. I got to know Welsh people over the years. Through rugby union, really, through being in Waterford, where I come from,
and you can't help it.
I believe that you can't help it. And every year, the Six Nations, there's a group of Welsh guys that they don't go to watch the games; they travel to whatever country. So Wales could be playing Ireland, and it might be in Cardiff, but these guys will travel to Ireland for the weekend to watch the game and get pissed up, rather than go to the Millennium Stadium.
I understand.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
2005, at the last game of the Wales, when Wales won the Grand Slam, the last game was against Ireland. I watched it in an Irish bar in Amsterdam with a load of Irish people. It was a proper way to do it.
Even better than being there, yeah. And Welsh men, and Welsh people are proud to be Welsh. I remember one night, I was in a bar one night. I was DJing in a bar, and I didn't realise there was a bunch of Welsh guys in the bar. I had no idea. And I was DJing in this bar, and this particular bar insisted that I end the night playing Our Own Navin, the Irish national anthem. So anyway, I played it and it finished. And then these guys came to the DJ box, about seven of them, and sang the Welsh national anthem, which is called, Johnny?
Land
of my fathers. I know. And they were unbelievable.
Yeah.
I never heard anything like it. It's one of the most beautiful songs of all time. And as a proud Welshman yourself, how hard is it for you to say to me, Richie, I'm going to try and get out of here in the next few days?
I'm looking to maybe run away for about 3 months, so that the dust can settle and we can see where everything stands, really. But it's devastating because this is what's intriguing, is that we've gone through years of gentrification in the cities in Wales, and a lot of the cities and the towns like Swansea, Cardiff and stuff, they start to just look like versions of London. You know, they've made them look the same. They've installed the same bars, the same restaurants, it's the same brands up everywhere. But when you go into the countryside, I'd like to see you try and give vaccines to people in the countryside in rural Wales. The Welsh people don't. I mean, once they have a habit of going to the mountains as soon as things get tough. And I've seen a lot of that recently. I've seen a lot of my friends in Cardiff say, we got to get out of here. We can't hang around in the cities. And mainly, and this is a terrible thing to say, I suppose, but mainly because the cities are too English controlled. They're controlled by England, and including the Assembly. I mean, to think that the Welsh Assembly isn't in under the same amount of control. There's no devolution, really. There's no separate power. We're not the country that we want to be, Wales, and we're being forced to be something else and have been for a very long time.
Keep us posted, mate, will you? And it's been about a year and a bit since you were on, and I did say this to you last time. Don't be a stranger, Johnny. Don't wait to be asked back on, because when you've got something to say, you'll always have an open door ear, because you're incredibly articulate. You're a fantastic writer. And I love having you on. I want to just mention, before you get the final word, which you will have, folks, go to unlimitedhangout.com, but do also check out Johnny's own website, johnnyvedmore.com. We have been listening today to the independent journalist, terrific writer and musician, Johnny Vedmore. Final word to you, pal. Thanks for coming back today.
Well, two things. Thanks for all your work yourself. I mean, you've changed my future as well as many others. You gave me an opportunity very early on. It was an opportunity that I really needed to start my career in investigating. And since then, it's gone crazy. I've just thrown myself into it. And you're part of that. But to the other people out there, to the people, everybody listening, and I want you to know this, really, I love you. Richie loves you. People love you. People love each other still. People have love. People want to continue loving. What they're trying to do right here is stop us from communicating. And love cannot happen without communication. It cannot happen without bonding. It cannot happen without social awareness. And so there's only one thing that they're trying to stop here, and we all know what it is.
Johnny, you're brilliant, mate. Thanks for coming back today. Good luck in the coming days, and keep us posted on what's happening and where you're going. And folks, by the way, follow Johnny on Twitter. You'll see tweets. I've been tweeting him. If you aren't already following him, follow him on Twitter. He updates there regularly. Thanks, Johnny. God bless you.
Thanks, Richie.
Speak soon. Bye for now. Johnny Vedmore, what a great guy he is. Unlimitedhangout.com, johnnyvedmore.com. Welshman, proud Welshman, writer, and great musician as well. Live on The Richie Allen Show this Monday, November 30th. And that was a lovely sentiment there, wasn't it? Right, let's have some Morrissey then. Why not? Don't forget Dr. Vernon Coleman in around about 6 or 7 minutes time as well. And I'm the BBG, by the way. How are you? Lovely to be speaking with you today. And I've not even looked at your tweets yet, but do keep tweeting. Vernon Coleman very soon. Interesting drug. Right, that's Moz, as he is affectionately known as Moz there. Listen, have a listen to this. This is Julie calling BBC Radio 5 Live's Emma Barnett to talk about dobbing in her neighbour. And I wouldn't want to be encouraging or to be part of any encouragement for retribution against people like Julie. Never, ever be violent, ever, under any circumstances. Unless you're defending yourself physically. Don't. It's what they want you to become. Don't become a monster to take on a monster. But this is dreadful. This is what we've been reduced to.
Yes. Hi, Julie.
Morning.
Tell us what happened.
Somebody who lives down the road from me is a hairdresser. And pretty much since lockdown in March, she has been doing people's hair from home, going to her elderly customers' homes doing hair. And on Saturday, I saw two people going in to get their hair done, and I was just so angry with it. I called the police and I felt awful doing it. But she got caught in the act. She got fined and she said it was the first time that she'd done it, which was a blatant lie. She's been claiming all the grants and benefits, but still working.
How do you know that? Do you know her?
Yes.
Right.
So she has told me. She claimed, because she's self-employed, she claimed the grants at the beginning. And then she was quite happy to brag about how much work she was doing in the garden. She was having trees cut down, decking done, hot tub, all of this is the money that she claimed, but still working.
Are you friends?
Well, not really, no. I know her socially just to speak to.
Yeah.
But over the last, since March, she's just absolutely taken the mickey out of the whole system.
And have you ever done that before, called the police on any of your
neighbours? No, never. Never. It's not something I would do because I wouldn't want to have any repercussions of it. She's not my direct neighbour. And we live on quite a busy road, so the chances of her finding out that it was me are quite narrow.
Pretty cowardly stuff, that, isn't it? Very cowardly. The chances of her knowing it was me who basically dropped the dime, as they say, stateside, are very remote because we don't really live near one another. I detected the smell of horse manure from Julie there. We don't know each other that well, just to see one another socially from time to time, and yet we're supposed to believe that this hairdresser was claiming money from the government and working at the same time, and that she told Julie this. It's kind of highly unlikely. It was like she was rationalising her decision to phone the police and to say, to tell the police, oh, you need to go around and check on this woman because she's cutting hair in her own house. How did we get to that? And that was something, if I remember correctly, that Peter Hitchens, the writer, who you see in the Mail on Sunday quite a bit, Hitchens was at the very outset of lockdown, when questions were being asked about would you hang your neighbours out to dry if your neighbour had a party, if your neighbour had people around in the garden, would you phone the old Bill? Hitchens was saying that people would do that. They would do it. They will do it, said Hitchens, and it'll become commonplace. And there you have a woman ringing a national radio station to basically say, yes, I rang the police because my neighbour was making some money by cutting hair. It's exactly 10 minutes past the hour. This is Monday's Richie Allen radio show, broadcasting live from Salford. My next guest needs no introduction whatsoever. You are very fond of him, as are many around the world who have read his books, which have sold, been translated into more languages than I've had hot dinners, and have sold millions of copies. Former GP, he'll always be Dr. Vernon Coleman to us. Find him at vernoncoleman.com, and brandnewtube.com is where you will be able to see the terrific An Old Man in a Chair series. Delighted to welcome him back to the show today. Dr. Vernon Coleman, welcome back. How are you?
I'm fine. Richie, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks. I feel a lot better, and thanks to you for all of that advice that you gave me. I probably should send you a few, Bob. You gave me some bloody good advice. You did. I was rough with the throat, and then the wisdom tooth, and all of that. So you're a great pal like that. Really moved me that you cared enough to send me advice and things to do and all of that. So I know I'm very good, and I'm glad to have you back on. And can I do something now that might annoy you? Because I'm going to shut up and let you talk. But before I do, can I play you a few seconds of Nadeem Zahawi? He has been given the job by the government of overseeing the rollout of the vaccine. And in conversation with BBC Radio 4 today, he was speaking to the presenter about a future world where the private sector would basically insist that people have vaccines. Service providers would insist that people have vaccines, otherwise they wouldn't be getting in, as it were. Have a listen to this, Vernon. When we come back, then you can take over. You are listening to, you will be listening to Dr. Vernon Coleman, but listen to this.
It's good for your family, it's good for your community, it's good for your country to be vaccinated, and ultimately people will have to make a decision.
Okay, but presumably it will be the case that if you have a vaccine, you will then have some form of immunity passport. And we know that Baroness Harding, who's running Test and Trace, is looking at this idea of even having it in the app, the proof of your vaccine status. That is presumably going to limit what some people do. If you want to go to a football game, for example, or if you want to get on a flight.
We are looking at the technology and, of course, a way of people being able to inform their GP that they've been vaccinated. But also, I think you'll probably find restaurants and bars and cinemas and other venues, sports venues, will probably also use that system, as they've done with the app. The reason I think partly the app's been so successful, I think we're touching just under 19 million downloads of the app, is because a lot of places that you would go to, they've got the QR code from the NHS that you scan for your own safety. And so I think in many ways, the sort of the pressure will come from both ways, from service providers who will say, look, you know, demonstrate to us that you've been vaccinated, but also we will make the technology as easy and as accessible as possible.
Okay, so it'll become virtually impossible to do anything if you don't have the vaccine.
I think people have to make a decision, but I think you'll probably find many service providers will want to engage in this in the way they did with the app.
There you are in a nutshell, Dr. Vernon Coleman. If you haven't had the vaccine, service providers, well, they are less likely to do business with you. What's your reaction to that, first of all?
Shiver down my spine. He sounded like a human being, but that was one of the most scary things I've ever heard from a politician or anyone else. And it's the 77th Brigade are listening to this, which I have no doubt they are, so that they can take it out as soon as you put it on YouTube. We should have a sweepstake on that, how many minutes it takes them. But they should remember that what I'm going to say will affect them as well as everyone else, because having created a problem, the COVID-19 hoax, the government has now encouraged the development of a solution. And we can talk another time about why these two things go hand in hand. But the you cannot make a decision about whether or not to have a vaccination unless you're informed. Now, one of the things about healthcare these days, if anybody's had an operation in the last year or two or had any serious drug therapy, they will know that a doctor has to tell you what all the risks might be. They tell you endlessly all the possible consequences of the treatment they're offering. They can't do that for vaccines for two reasons. One, because much of the information is secret. And secondly, because the minute a doctor opens his mouth and says anything critical about vaccines, he becomes an anti-vaxxer. You aren't allowed to criticize vaccines, even if you're only repeating stuff that's been in journals, even if you're the world's leading expert on vaccines. You can't say anything critical because then you become an anti-vaxxer. The British Medical Journal suggested that the trials that have been done weren't designed to test whether the vaccines reduced severe symptoms or whether they interrupted the transmission. So the British Medical Journal is an anti-vaxxer journal. The endless nonsense about this, what no one seems to remember is that billions, with a B, billions of dollars have been paid out to patients or their relatives if the patients died who had vaccinations and then had problems with them. There are at least 66, to my knowledge, fully tested and approved vaccines in America which had to be discontinued mainly for safety issues. So anyone who says that vaccines are always safe is clearly in need of some medical help. The risks with these vaccines, we know remarkably little about them because stuff's being hidden. But what we do know is that 100% of those who had two doses of the Moderna mRNA had systemic adverse events, and you don't want those. And over 50% of Pfizer and AstraZeneca were about the same. There was one reported death with Pfizer. We're not talking about millions of patients in the trials. And The Lancet, which has never really been my favorite journal, I believe they acknowledge the possibility of an increase in the risk of HIV infection. The way the trials have been done frightens not just me, but a lot of doctors. Usually when you trial a new drug, you trial it against a sugar tablet, a placebo, something that contains nothing active in it. Now, from what I've been able to find out, AstraZeneca tested their product against a meningitis vaccine, which has significant adverse effects.
Yeah.
So one would reasonably expect that their vaccine for COVID-19 would come out quite well. That's not a placebo. In my book, it's not a placebo. And remember, these drug companies, AstraZeneca, they've been fined huge amounts of money for fraud. My book, this isn't a plug because it's free. My book, COVID-19, Greatest Hoax in History, is available free on the lightpaper.co.uk as a PDF, and it's available free on my website. But download it and then look for AstraZeneca. And look for GSK, and look for and the other vaccine companies. And you look and you think, do I really want to trust? Because that's what we're being told to do. We're being told to trust these people. The Financial Times, which is hardly a normally critical, they ran an article the other day headlined, "Doubts Raised Over AstraZeneca Oxford Vaccine Data." So the Financial Times is now officially an anti-vaxxer newspaper.
Yeah,
I never thought I'd say that. FT, anti-vaxxer newspaper, because they've said something critical. They said that there were two mistakes, there were two problems with the AstraZeneca. One, there was a mistake in the dosage given to the trial patients. And secondly, according to the FT, they tested people under 55. Well, they're going to be doling this out to people who are a lot older than 55. Here's another thing. The head of Operation Warp Speed in the States, which is the one that's getting the vaccine done as quickly as possible, is led by a former GSK executive. Look up GSK. GSK, of course, is a company that Valance, our chief scientific officer, worked for many years and in which he still has quite a considerable number of shares. I hope the 77th Brigade is taking note of all this, because this is your body that they're going to put this vaccine in. because I've no doubt that the army will be saying you've got to have one of these vaccines. In America, they are now trialing messages. The one big trial that they're doing is to trial messages to get people to accept the vaccine. The trialing messages like, if you have the vaccine, you'll be able to regain your personal freedom.
Yeah.
If you have the vaccine, you'll get your economic freedom, and so on and so forth. That's what they're worried about. Not so much whether the vaccine is got to be properly trialed, but how they can use manipulation, brainwashing, and all the usual psyop techniques to get people to take it. But there's one piece of good news in all this.
Go on.
Sorry?
I'm all ears. Good news for a change.
The bit of good news is that there's lots and lots of talk about making the vaccine mandatory, right? Here and there and in America and in the UK. Now, in America, they are using an emergency approval. It normally takes years and years and years to get full approval for a new vaccine, because normally everyone likes to know that the vaccine is safe and it's not going to kill thousands or millions of people. I am not saying it will kill thousands or millions of people. I don't know. And there is no one else in the world who knows exactly what's going to happen in 5 or 10 years' time, because normally they test them for 5 or 10 years and they look to see what's happening. In America, because they want to speed things up, they're using something like called emergency approval. And when you this is the emergency use authorization law. Now, under the emergency use authorization law, as I understand it, and I'm no lawyer, for heaven's sake, as I understand it, individual states are banned from mandating a vaccine which has been approved for emergency use, because obviously it hasn't gone through all the test procedures. So, and the full license will take years. Then they could introduce mandatory vaccination. But off an emergency use authorization law, I don't think they can. So what happens if your employer or the cinema or a restaurant says you've got to have a vaccine certificate or you can't come in? What I would do is to say, well, I'm not having the vaccine anyway, but what I would do is I would say, you must sign a form, date, sign, place, saying that you are insisting that I have this vaccination. The drug companies are not liable, because they've managed to, thanks to Bill Gates, they've managed to get immunity. I don't think GPs or the people giving the vaccines will be liable, because they're part of the immunity. But I wouldn't have thought that if an employer tells you to have the vaccine, he's not giving you the vaccine. So I would have thought, and I'd love to hear from lawyers, I would have thought that the employer will then be liable if he says you can't come to work unless you have the vaccination. And the other thing that about all this that springs to mind, I was going to mention this earlier, but the other thing that springs to mind is that the reason for the PSYOP techniques for you've got to have the vaccine because it's the only way you'll get your freedom back and you'll not be able to travel, you'll not be able to buy food or get whatever.
Save granny, of course. Don't forget save granny. It'll save granny. It'll protect the vulnerable.
Yes. You'll kill granny if you don't have it. That's Witty's favourite, isn't it?
Yeah, Jesus.
It does seem rather strange that it was Witty, I think, and it was certainly the government that told people not to treat the over 80s or the over 85s, whatever it was, when they were being dumped in care homes. And so tens of thousands of them died around the world, because it wasn't save granny then, was it? It was kill granny. Yeah. All these DNR notices. You've got one wrinkle, you have a DNR notice stuffed on your chest. The fact is that around the world, they have got huge problems with this damned vaccine. The first is that in America, only 42% of people accept the vaccine, and two-thirds of those were concerned. I saw a survey which showed that most healthcare professionals in America wouldn't take the vaccine. In the UK, just 40% of GPs, I think it was 40%, said they wouldn't take the vaccine. Believe me, the rest are either liars or morons, and I suspect that there might be a certain amount of, well, let's not rock the boat, because don't forget, GPs are going to make a fortune out of giving this vaccine and the flu vaccine. The flu vaccine's normally a 10 quid something a shot. They're going to get 12 quid a shot, and there's two shots for the COVID vaccine, so you can work that out. If an average GP has got 2,500 patients, multiply that by 2 by 12, it's more than 12, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah,
12
yeah.
something for giving each jab. So you can imagine that GPs, well, you can't imagine, but it's a fact, GPs have got a vested interest in flogging this vaccine. But even so, 40% of them said, oh, I'm not having that, thank you very much. And to that I would add, I've known a lot of doctors in my lifetime. I've never known one who has vaccinations.
You've never known one that actually takes their own medicine. That's really interesting to me, that.
I've not known one doctor who had vaccinations for flu and all the rest of it. The problem comes back to the thing I said right at the beginning, which was that when you have a vaccination or a drug, you want, or anything, you want to know that the risks with it are smaller than the risk of not having it.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And with vaccines, a good vaccine should stop a serious illness. It should interfere with the transmission of the illness, and it should be safe. And it should protect people more than injure people. We do not know at the moment what on earth is going to happen if they roll out any or all of these vaccines, of which the government in the UK has bought how many? 330 million doses?
Yeah.
Paid
yeah.
taxpayers' money? No, I think it's more than that. But what the hell is going on? Why aren't people stomping in the streets? Well, they were the other day. Bless dear old Piers Corbyn, who gets more arrested more times than I've had out dinners to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Old phrase. Bless his heart, what a warrior.
He's a great guy, Piers Corbyn. It was kind of distressing, really, to see people who should know better. People like Ian Collins on talk radio, you know, criticising the protesters and questioning their real motives for being there. I have great admiration for them. It's a human right to travel, to move around, to congregate, to assemble. The right to do that. Here's a question that's come in from somebody called Glass Onion on Twitter. It isn't the first time I've seen this question. It's real speculative stuff, this. He says, or she says, Richie, any chance you could ask Dr. Coleman if he thinks there's a possibility that the first round of vaccines might be a placebo? Now, a lot of people who have gone down the rabbit hole and who believe that these vaccines are about something else entirely, and I have a lot of sympathy for these people and I share many of their concerns, they wonder if this first round of vaccines will be a placebo in order to avoid causing any harm, and that maybe the vaccines that come after will be vaccines we might be more concerned about. It's speculative stuff. What do you think of that?
It's speculation, and the 77th Brigade would become hysterical. But yes, of course, anything is now possible. They're giving two vaccinations. Now, I'm not aware of any other vaccine of this type. You don't normally have two flu vaccines, two attacks of the flu vaccine.
Yeah.
Why? What's going on? We don't know very much about this, so it has to be possible. And the fact that we aren't allowed to even discuss or ask or check out what's being made available just shows how far our rights have been diminished. You were talking about the demos the other day. Has there ever been a time since the Magna Carta when people in this country, in the UK, were not allowed to demonstrate? They weren't even allowed to demonstrate during World War II if they disapproved of something that the government had done. This is the first time. And what on earth do the police think they're doing? Do the police not realise that they will all be out of work in 2 or 3 years' time because the snitches and the sneaks will be used to collect information? The Chinese, who are already showing us the way, are using robots. We're using drones as well. There won't be a job for the police if the government in 2 years' time needs anybody with force, people with force. They'll just bring in the military.
They'll bring in the military and they'll use the Boston Dynamics manufactured drones. Not drones, robots.
Police, do not have a future.
No.
Those policemen who were active, whatever, wherever they came from, those policemen who were active on Saturday in London, they should realise they're putting themselves out of a job in the same way that doctors are putting themselves out of the job. When GPs said, oh, yes, this is great fun, instead of having face-to-face meetings, we'll do... they were signing death certificates and giving out terrible diagnoses by Zoom. When GPs started to do that, they finally finished the whole point of doctors in general practice. And in the future, there won't be any, because it's been shown that computers are more effective, better at making diagnoses than doctors. So if you take away the friendly, the placebo response. The placebo response of a kindly GP is massive. If you see a nice doctor who says, if you do this, you'll get better, or I'm going to give you some pills, it's well known that that has a 30% uplift. If you take away those doctors and you replace them with computers and Zooms and telephones, which is what they've done, then what's the point of having a doctor? You might just as well have a computer. And those GPs who are now working for the for those internet services, which an awful lot of them are, they're not doing very much GPing, but they're doing an awful lot of internet GPing and getting paid that on top of what they get paid as GPs. But they don't seem to realize there is no future for doctors now. They will be replaced.
No, it's important to re-emphasize that, what you've just said there, the BBC has run a number of programs recently on different BBC channels talking about how the artificial intelligence software is already there and working well to do exactly what you just described. So you would have your phone or your tablet and AI would tell you what's wrong with you and what you need to do. That's a fact.
I wrote the first algorithm for the first computerized home medical computer stuff in, I think, 1984 with a pal who did the computer stuff, and I wrote the questions, and it was just a pile of huge algorithms, which I did for a book, and then also we turned into computer. It was one of those things with the tapes, which used to go hiss, buzz, whatever, and you could use it on a Sinclair something or other. But it went all around the world. We sold them all over the world because there was nothing else at the time. And that was in 1984, so you can tell how much, literally, oddly enough, it was in 1984.
A great year, yeah. And did you think at the time that this was bad, this was a bad thing? Did you think, wow, in 35, 40 years' time, there won't be any need for Dr. Vernon Coleman?
No, I thought that this would be a very good... The book that was allied to it, which has been long out of print, was called Aspirin or Ambulance. And the idea was that it would enable patients to decide... whether they could treat something at home or whether they really needed to ring for a doctor or an ambulance.
Right.
It never occurred to me at the time, it never occurred to me that this would be taking over from doctors. It was an adjunct, it was an accessory, it was something, it was like a home doctor book, but a sort of a bit more updated. You just went through the series of questions which asked you, is the patient pouring blood or is the patient complaining of pain here? Yes, no questions. It was a simple, basic algorithm like all computers operate on. But it never occurred to me that that was going to replace doctors. If I was talking to a 19-year-old who was looking for a career, I would say, don't go into medicine because by the time you've qualified, there won't be any medicine.
There won't be any need for you.
Any need for you. They do operations now with robots operated by computer. They don't need doctors at all. The computer, some people will think I'm kidding. I'm not. The computer makes the diagnosis. The robots wheel the patients into the surgery, and the surgeon, the robot surgeon, will perform the operation. They don't need doctors. They won't need, or they do at the moment a bit, just to, while they're polishing off and improving the stuff. But they won't in 10 years' time.
And what's the biggest problem? The biggest problem with that then might be that you take all the passion, all the humanity out of it, and it's artificial intelligence. And in the near future, you might have a situation where artificial intelligence programs refuse to treat certain people because of the cost-benefit aspect of it. The computer might just decide there's no point in treating this person, so leave them to their own devices or leave them to die. That might become something, that might become a thing, right?
Do you mean like we're already doing now with all
yeah,
the DNR?
I suppose, yeah, that's right.
And the nail by mouth, the Liverpool care pathway. I love the way they call it the Liverpool care pathway. Or the Liverpool kill pathway. The nail by mouth, which is now incredibly common in hospitals. People, old people just being left to die. And the way they leave them to die is to starve them of food and water, and then they die. That's what we're doing in this country. And people are putting up with it, Richie. What in the
They don't
hell?
Know, Vernon. We've got Dr. Vernon Coleman live on the Richie Allen radio show, and this is a very important juncture here, because everything he's saying is true. I'm not interrupting him and criticising him and telling him he's wrong, because he isn't. They don't bloody well know in this country about Liverpool Care Pathway, nil by mouth, DNRs. The average Joe on the street, Dr. Vernon Coleman, they don't know, and it kills me. They don't know this stuff.
They don't know to a large extent, because the biggest problem in this country and in the world at the moment, the biggest problem, in my view, is not vaccines, it's not lockdowns, it's not masks. So all those things drive me insane. It is not those things. It's the media. Because if we could reach people, if I am banned in so many places, I reckon it started over 20 years ago, the banning, the closing down of the media. But more recently, it has become absolutely ridiculous. The number of people, not just me, but the number of doctors who've been banned, the number of eminent physicians who have written papers and studied stuff, and they have been banned. They've had their videos taken down by Screw YouTube, who basically just takes down anything which criticizes anything which government or the World Health Organization suggests is the right way to look at things. So if the World Health Organization said we all had to stick our heads in a bucket of custard, Screw YouTube would take your video down if you said, I don't think this is a good idea. They put up with anything that comes out as long as it follows the party line and doesn't question anything. I had videos taken down because I pointed out that all the things that they were doing to kill people during the worst part of the lockdowns, when they killed, the government reckoned they'd killed 150,000, the lockdowns would kill 150,000 people, and it never occurred to the masses in the media. It never occurred to the mass market media that by killing 150,000 with the lockdowns, they were going to kill far more people than they were ever going to kill with COVID-19. But the fact is that they went ahead with that, with the lockdowns, allowed them to kill loads of people. And I did a video saying what this is part of the let's reduce the population. Bill Gates's and Prince Charles's population reduction program, just killing off people who are sick, killing off people who are ill. The madness, the media, the mass market media has not touched any of this stuff. The fact that, what was it, I think 450 people died of flu in the UK between August. 450. Yeah. Nobody thought, this is odd, because normally it's 25,000-50,000 people a year in Britain die of flu. Now we're being told that 50,000 people have died of COVID, but none have died of flu. Can't anybody put two and two together and get something remotely resembling four? What we've got is a pile of journalists who are so stupid that they think, or I assume they think, that when Agenda 21 really gets going and we follow the Chinese model and we start having to live in smart cities and we're all being told exactly what sort of slave job we have to do, and I'm not exaggerating, when all this happens, the idiot journalists, like the idiot policemen, think they're going to be exempt. Of course they're not going to be exempt. They're going to be dead like the rest of us. And they're all going to be taking the vaccine, are they? Are there not any health correspondents anymore on the national newspapers who look at this stuff and say, hang on a minute, have a word with the editor about this because it's a good story here? No, they're all silent. The silent radio, silent television, silent newspapers, silent magazines. And apart from you and I, there's not an awful lot. No, that's not true. That's not fair. But what I'm saying is that apart from a relatively small number of people, probably 100 people around making videos and your radio show and trying hard to get on social media, everybody's being closed down. The number of people who are actually speaking out is incredibly small compared to what it should be. And the number of people who are actually doing anything about it is horrifyingly small. We should have everybody listening to this should be printing out leaflets. There's a pile on my website. Print them out. Put them through people's letterboxes. Look at the piece on the website, which takes you straight to the bit on the government website where in March, a committee that was clearly not under proper control, a government committee decreed that the coronavirus, which has allegedly caused the alleged COVID-19, allegedly, that coronavirus was not a serious infectious disease. And when I saw that, I put it straight away on my website, did a thing on the video and thought, well, everybody in the media will be running this tomorrow. They still haven't run it. Richie, they still haven't run it. They still haven't told their readers, their listeners, their viewers that the coronavirus is officially no worse than the flu. Go and download the stuff that the government said. I think it was about the 22nd or 20-something. Anyway, download it. I put a link, there's a link on my website which takes you straight there because it's a little bit hidden. But when you go there, you can look at it and you can think, my goodness, they knew in March that it was no worse than the flu. How many times in the history of the world have they closed schools, closed hospitals, and closed shops and businesses for the flu? I'll tell you, nil.
No, yeah.
What on earth is going on? Why aren't people screaming? Why aren't people downloading everything they can find, sending copies of everything they can find to everybody that they know and everybody they don't know, to MPs, to school teachers, including the stupid, stupid, cruel ones who want school children to wear masks, even though, as far as I'm aware, there's still no healthy child in the UK died of COVID-19. And the school teachers want them to wear masks, even in primary school. They should be arrested because that is so cruel. Kids are going to grow up with half a brain, no teeth, terrible eyes. The problems caused by these masks is endless. The problems caused by masks just go on and on and on. And people keep saying, oh, we've got to wear on. I've got a nice, pretty mask now to wear. Anybody who wears a mask is an idiot. They're committing suicide. They'll have no brain left in a few years' time, and they will be dead of bronchial pneumonia, quite likely. There's a I went to a garden center that the only bloody thing open at the moment is a garden center. I keep going buying more shovels because nothing else to do. I went to a garden center and traipsed around. Everybody wearing masks, of course. And I got chatting to one of the guys and saying, you shouldn't wear that because it's killing your brain cells. And he knew I was telling the truth, and he agreed with me, and he agreed he was going to put a visor on. But the point was that the girl who usually works on the counter, 19-year-old girl, bronchial pneumonia, ill, endless stories. There was a video I saw on the internet, a chiropractor in America talking about a 4-year-old who had developed bronchial pneumonia because of wearing a mask. Two children in China died exercising while wearing masks. The amount of bronchial pneumonia, it is now becoming a real epidemic, because when you wear a mask, you're breathing in all the bugs that the mask's got. And please, if anybody ever says again, well, surgeons wear masks, please point out to them that surgeons wear masks in an air-conditioned environment. They take them off every 2 hours. They only touch the ear loops. They don't put them in their pockets or their handbags. And a lot of surgeons don't wear masks because it has been proved beyond any question of doubt that masks aren't necessary in an operating theatre. And if you think that's all a load of rubbish,
no, it's true.
Download my book, which is free, again, on thelightpaper.co.uk or on my website, where you'll be able to read the scientific evidence proving that masks do more harm than good. And if I do a video about that and I tried to put it on YouTube, it would be down before the ink was dry, because you are not allowed to say in public now the truth about masks.
Even though, as you said multiple times, they themselves acknowledged at the outset of all of this nonsense that masks were useless. The World Health Organization's own advice is in line with what you're saying today. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest. This is the media. Listen to this. This is 12 seconds. This is your media in 2020. I can't believe I'm listening to this.
What is the point of seeing Granny on Christmas Day if you end up burying her in the new year? I'm sorry for the bluntness of that thought.
He's sorry for the bluntness of that thought, Jeremy Vine. Jeremy Vine endorsing on his radio show on BBC Radio 2, endorsing locking yourself into a miserable, lonely, isolated Christmas in case you end up burying Granny in January. This is our media.
This is the BBC, which is the most treacherous, disgraceful. Goebbels would have been proud of the BBC. Goebbels would have given the BBC all sorts of medals for what they've been doing recently. Their idea of reporting is out of this. It's somewhere. It's not journalism. I don't know what it is. Well, it's propaganda. That's what it is. And why don't people just put Granny in a cupboard under the stairs and throw a mince pie in every now and again? This is becoming...
Sorry for laughing.
It's true, though, Richie, isn't it? I mean, you can't make it up. I was trying to write a pastiche today of what they've been doing, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult to mock what they're doing, although I think mocking is important because that's one of the ways to get people to see things, but... It's very difficult to mock when you've heard. So I hadn't heard that before. That disgraceful, disgusting Jeremy Vine garbage.
Yeah.
For which, how much does this guy get paid a year? Well, whatever it is, it's whatever it is, he gets paid too much. Why aren't people sending? Why doesn't everybody listening to this send the PDFs, which are free? That I've already mentioned, send the PDFs of those books to Jeremy Vine at the BBC. You'll be able to get his email address from somewhere. Send him those and say, look, this is the truth, because it is. Everything in them is provably true.
Hey, that's a good idea. Hang on, that's a good idea. Vine@bbc.co.uk. I think it's vine@bbc.co.uk. I would ask everybody listening to this tonight, I will do it myself, to send a link to the books Vernon mentioned, Dr. Vernon Coleman mentioned, to Jeremy Vine. Don't be rude and don't be abusive to anybody, please. I would ask you not to be rude or abusive. And Vernon Coleman wouldn't accept it either. So send and ask Jeremy Vine and his producer, and don't just do it with Vine, do it with Nikki Campbell and Rachel Burden on Radio 5 Live, and ask them, why aren't you speaking to people like Dr. Vernon Coleman about the claims made in these books? Absolutely do that. It's a good idea, that. That's dreadful.
And we have to get them to look at and talk about the fact that there is no general information available about vaccines. How are people to make an informed decision? I keep hearing politicians say, oh, we want people to make an informed decision. How? You can't make an informed decision unless you've got the information. That's the point of informed decision. You can't make one unless you've got some information. But the information that I was giving you about the risks and the quite serious side effects. How many people we were told early on with the trials about at least two patients who had, I think it was transverse myelitis, which is very nasty. What happened to those patients? What's happened? What other side effects? There was someone who had, some guy who had such severe seizures, spasms, that he broke a tooth. What are the what exactly has been trialled, who has been tested, what were the exact results of those trials. Let's not have any more rubbish where the people were escalating, oh, our vaccine is better than your vaccine. No, our vaccine's better than yours. Our vaccine, one of them said, our vaccine doesn't have to be kept as cold as your vaccine. It's like kids in the playground. Except it's kids in the playground. I read somewhere the other day, and I don't know whether this is true because I haven't been able to back it up yet, but I read somewhere the other day that Moderna was charging $200 a go for their vaccine.
No way.
$200 a go. That's what I read. Now, Moderna, as you know, is linked in with the Bill and Melinda Gates vaccine foundation. And of course, Bill, like Prince Philip, Prince Charles, and all sorts of other eminent people, wants to reduce the world population to, 500 million? So they've got to get rid of 6.5 billion.
Yeah,
$6,500,000,000.
And ironically, the vaccine will help us do that. Before I forget to ask you, I don't want to be interrupting your train of thought, but I am mindful of the clock as well. Before, you were on the Late Late Show in Dublin some years ago. I know you were. You told me, but I knew it anyway. And I think, God rest his soul, Gay Byrne was the presenter who spoke to you. So you'll probably know that once a year, the Late Late Show has the Late Late Toy Show, which is very child orientated. They get loads of children in and they've got all these new fancy toys and new developments and all that sort of stuff. Have you heard yet about a sketch? The Toy Show was on Friday night just gone, and there was a sketch about a Pfizer vaccine. Did you know this?
No.
Do you want to hear a little bit of it?
Yeah.
You're not going to believe your ears. Let me set it up again for our listeners. Toy Show. Ryan Tuberty is the presenter, and there is a very young girl called Saoirse, and she's obviously rehearsed a sketch about how to inject a person with a Pfizer vaccine, COVID vaccine, and she's demonstrating it on a toy dog. This is the worst thing you've ever heard in your life now, in terms of the media. If you think the BBC is bad, have a listen to some of this. I better play it quick before we run out of time. Have a listen, Dr. Vernon Coleman.
Who's this?
This is Toby Tuberty, and he's here in the vet centre today to be tested for coronavirus.
Oh. Okay, so Tony Tuberty is being tested. Was he reporting any symptoms?
No.
No, he's just a hypochondriac. Okay, so what are you going to do with Tony Tuberty for the test?
So first we need to take a sample of all his known contacts. So he told me he's been in contact with 3 dogs in the last 14 days. So then that goes to the post office to be posted to the HSE.
Oh, my God. Your children shouldn't know this. Anyway, that's right. You're dead. You're doing all the right things. Tony would be delighted with you. Go on. The other Tony. What happens next?
Now he gets medicine to help him with coronavirus.
Oh, great. So did he actually have the virus?
I think so.
Okay.
And over here is the regurgitation station.
What's that?
If he needs to vomit.
Oh, I see.
After the medicine.
Okay.
Now we need to get him a Pfizer vaccine.
Gosh, you don't waste time, do you, Saoirse? You're ahead of the game, so does he like...
He's not participating, so we're going to have to knock him out.
Okay. Poor Tony's having a rough day at the clinic. Okay, so you've
now
knocked him out.
Now we need to just check if he's still with us.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Yep, he's still with us.
He's still with us. Okay, this is great. This is the story of survival, isn't it? So what happens
now? Now he gets the Pfizer vaccine.
Bang. Okay.
Now he gets the Pfizer vaccine. You just heard an 8-year-old girl be used by the Irish national broadcaster to sell a Pfizer vaccine on a toy show. I've never heard of anything like that in all my life.
Kids used to write letters to Santa, to Father Christmas. Do you remember that? Kids used to write a letter to Father Christmas. Now they're doing their shills. They're doing product placement for a drug company, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
And I gather that the government, apart from having the army to take down people like, take down nasty doctors like me, the government is actually paying celebrities and, of course, quite a lot of doctors to say nice things about the vaccine so that everyone will want to have it. Every single one of those people should examine their souls and say, well, if I'm going to promote this vaccine, I want at least £1 billion a day for doing that because I am selling my soul.
Yeah.
What a disgrace. I'll tell you one thing. I don't pay the BBC licence fee, and I haven't done for years. And you mustn't not pay the BBC licence fee illegally, of course, but there are ways to do it legally, as everybody knows. But one of the perks, apart from not paying towards Jeremy Vine's salary, is that every month you get a threatening letter. So it's a threatening letter club. It's like a book club.
Yeah,
you
get them as well.
Wonderful. They're all different every month.
Yeah.
A threatening letter from the BBC every month. And I love it because I reckon it must cost them at least £1 a month to send out these bloody letters.
I get them so as well.
So there you are. Don't pay your BBC licence fee, but don't pay it legally. Don't do it illegally, of course, because that would be naughty. But then you'll get a threatening letter a month club free. Isn't that good? A good tip?
It's hilarious, yeah. It's funny you say once a month because I wouldn't have known how many I get, but I think it is on average. Now that you say it, I think it's about one a month, but they're not aware of us in terms of they're not aware of our names. So it's just to the householder or whoever's responsible, you need to pay us or we'll send somebody around. Somebody came around in my previous house in Fallowfield and I answered the door. Have you got a television? I said, it's none of your business. Can I come in? I said, no. And he said, okay, have a nice day. And that was the end of that.
They can't come in unless you ask them.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel sorry for the idiots who say, oh, yes, of course, come in. And then come in and have a cup of tea and watch the telly with them.
Dr. Vernon Coleman, you have been listening to the Dr. Vernon Coleman. VernonColeman.com. Please bookmark the website. Go in there. On the left-hand side, you'll see the menu. Go to health. And when you click on health, you'll get links to the PDFs of the books that Vernon mentioned, but also all of the flyer text that you can use to make your own flyers as well, and brandnewtube.com. And I was delighted to hear from Darren the other day, the man behind the light paper. He said that Vernon would be making a contribution to the light paper, which, by the way, you will have the final word now, 60 seconds before we run out of time. The light paper is doing extraordinarily well. They're getting it into thousands, tens of thousands of letterboxes. What a great thing. And I'm glad that you're going to be helping out there. That's a big gift to the people at the light paper. So well done, Vernon, for doing that. Final word to you, 60 seconds, and thanks for coming back and sharing your time with us again today.
It's always a joy to talk to you, Richie. The one thing I would say to everybody is this is war. This is not a campaign. This is war. Imagine that you're in France in the 1940s. You're in the resistance. Every moment that you're not working, earning a living, you have to spend some time working on fighting what is the most evil regime in our history or world history. This is not just a hoax or a fraud. This is a criminal event. And eventually we have to get all these people, the Hancocks, the rest of them, we have to get them all into court and into prison for what they are doing and what they have done, because they have killed so many people with these plans, with these programs, with these lockdowns. People have been denied medical treatment that they need. People are not getting... There are people in homes who haven't seen a relative or a friend since March. This is criminal behavior of the very worst category. And personally, I think everybody who's working for the media, like the BBC, Lord Haw-Haw must be their model.
Yeah.
These people. What does Jeremy Vine do? How does he create such... I mean, unbelievable. Get rid of these people. Don't pay the BBC licence fee. Do it legally, of course. Don't pay the BBC licence fee and smother these people with material, with leaflets, with books, so that they actually understand that there is a feeling in this country and indeed around the world that enough is enough. We have gone far too far. Stop it. No vaccinations, mandatory or otherwise, no lockdowns, no mask wearing. We want our freedom back, we want our lives back, and we want to get rid of these tyrants who are trying to destroy everything that's vital in our life and in our country.
Great to have you. Thanks, Vernon. Thanks so much, Dr. Vernon Coleman. VernonColeman.com. Look forward to doing it again real soon with you. Thanks again, Vernon. Great guy. Thanks to him for that. That's it for the programme. Thanks to Johnny Vedmore, the journalist in Wales. Thanks to Dr. Vernon Coleman. Thanks to you for listening. I've been to BBG. Bye now.